Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From the Missouri School of Journalism, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm David Reed. Every year, the Alfred Friendly Foundation places international journalists in newsrooms around the United States. There are two goals: to impart American journalistic traditions and to aid efforts worldwide to report fair and accurate news. The fellows this year came to our journalism school in early July for training. On today's show, we'll hear from three journalists in the program. Khalid Khattak and Vikas Bhanuri are from Pakistan. We'll hear from them later in the show. First up, Imran Hussain. He's a reporter from Bangladesh who works for BDNews24.com. His coverage includes the fast-growing garment industry in his home country. In April, he started working for the Huffington Post in Washington, D.C. That same month, the Rana Plaza garment factory in Bangladesh collapsed, killing more than 1,000 workers. Imran talked about covering the tragedy for the Huffington Post and about his previous coverage of the industry and its frequent disasters.
It was a very unfortunate incident to happen in Bangladesh, but it was an opportunity for me when it happened, actually, professionally. Because the Huffington Post liked that I covered this story for the news outlet.
Right, for BD News 24?
No, for the Huffington Post.
But when you were in Pakistan, when you were in Bangladesh, you covered the garment industry.
Yeah. It happens every year, you know. A lot of fire is taking place. And even the last year, more than 100 people were killed in another fire. Okay. And factory has been collapsing every other year.
So after this happened, they turned to you?
Yeah. They asked me that, why don't I cover this issue from Washington for this Huffington Post?
Right.
So I started covering that over telephone conversation.
Okay. Providing a great amount of insight to this topic that I wouldn't have without you.
What the Huffington Post wanted from me is that, what is the relation between the Western retailers and the garment factory workers there?
Okay.
So I wrote a report that the headline was like that: who is to blame? Look in the mirror. So what I tried to say in that report, and not me, it was actually the workers and the manufacturer, what they said, that it is only the American or the Western retailers who can make things change in Bangladesh.
Because of the demand for these cheap clothes.
Yeah. This is what they call it, the fast fashion or things like that. Though, as long as they are willing to get clothes at this price. So a poor country like Bangladesh, where 160 million people lives and over 75% of them are poor. So they will work even if you don't give them money.
So overall, how would you, now that you've worked with in the United States media, how would you compare and contrast it with the media in Bangladesh?
Theoretically, I don't find much difference between the media in United States and Bangladesh, because I see a lot of advertisement as it happens in Bangladesh. You know what I see? I can hardly remember that I saw a story that tells about an American farmer, and it was widely covered, or I could get to see this. I didn't see that kind of report. It is always about the consumers, the business, or the politicians that interest the people, the middle class people, or the rich people. Mm-hmm. So there are no voice of the poor. So I think it's almost the same, but at least here there is their individual freedom. So
yeah, how free are journalists in Bangladesh compared with here? I know you wrote about the case of the four bloggers being arrested with the blasphemy law. Does that illustrate the problems
facing journalists?
Actually,
there
is no point to discuss this freedom of expression, I think, because all the media in Bangladesh, they are mostly owned either by the politicians or by the businessmen. So the reporters are trained to think in a way that they never want to question anything that goes against their
owners. Self-censorship.
Self-censorship is pretty much strong in Bangladesh.
Okay. And even
the bloggers regarding the arrest of the four bloggers. So they were raising a question that it has been a long cherished dream for Bangladeshis, because in 1971 the country had a war, liberation war, and we won the freedom for a constitution that says that this country should be secular.
Right.
But our politicians have always been mixing religion with politics since then, over the four decades. And this blogger was trying to make this point that it should not be this.
So the bloggers were saying that there should be a separation of church and states, and then they were arrested. Tell us about what happened.
Some of them were making points that religion is the easiest tool to abuse people, and politicians make use of this tool very often, and they have been using this since the partition. So they were trying to, and they called for a program on at the city intersection, that is Shahbagh.
Right.
So a lot of people turned up there and supported that demand. But the mainstream politicians, they always cash in on the religious belief of the people.
Mm-hmm.
So they turned against this blogger because their move has turned a lot of people against the mainstream politicians' policy of mixing religion with politics. So they had them arrested, four of them, and one of them specifically wrote against the prime minister the day before he was arrested.
Okay. So, and what has happened since the arrest? They're still
over a month in jail. One of them was just attacked by some Islamist militants for his writing against the religion just in January this year. So he was still recovering from that injury when he was arrested. And he was suffering from these injuries while he was still in jail. So it took over a month for them to get released on bail. Still, they are still accused in several cases.
Okay. And how has the arrest of these bloggers caused even more self-censorship? What's been the impact of this crackdown?
One of these four bloggers is identified as the first-generation blogger in Bangladesh. He has been blogging since 2006, when blogging began in Bangladesh. So it definitely had an impact on on the people who are trying to write, because they are now afraid. They are what they might get arrested. So it will definitely have impact.
And tell us about the Shahbagh movement and that how that impacts journalism. Maybe just explain what it is.
The blogger. In mainstream media, bloggers are not considered as journalists.
Okay.
But the point, bloggers have always been the right person since they emerged in our country to make the right question. What was happening? Any injustices taken against the mass people, they were the first to raise the question.
So the bloggers...
rather than journalists. Because the journalists are either loyal to the politicians or to the businessmen, to the news outlets owned by them.
Okay. So the bloggers have been advocates for change.
Yeah. If we talk about journalism in the real sense, I think this is the first attack the attack on the bloggers is the attack on journalism there in Bangladesh.
Okay.
The arrest.
And what are some other examples of how social media has exposed wrongdoings in Bangladesh? And
I can give you an example. I investigated a story in Bangladesh last year. It was about a police force. It is called the Rapid Action Battalion.
Mm-hmm.
They call it elite police force to combat crimes. So they circulated a story with the help of media that a gang was out on the city to kidnap children, kids, and maim them for begging. dismember their parts of the body and send them for begging on the streets.
That's terrible.
So I started investigation, and I had a 3-4 months I investigated 3 to 4 months.
Yes.
And I found out that it was completely a false story. And the media outlets that helped rap, they were just friends, and they helped rap to save its reputation. That it was already criticized. The rap is already criticized by Human Rights Watch or international human rights organization, even by the politicians in the country, for its involvement in extrajudicial killings.
So the smear campaign.
Yeah. So it was just to get some good reputation that rap was protecting human rights. So when I came out, found out that story, I went to my employer and told them that it was my finding. They denied to publish that. And I waited for 6 months. They denied to publish that. I resigned from there. I joined another news outlet. Mm-hmm. They resigned. They denied to publish that too. So then we decided to shoot a documentary out of this. And it was an underground shooting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the documentary.
Yeah, yeah. And then we had it released online, so social media connections.
Right.
And it had great impacts.
How long was it, the documentary?
It is 1 hour and 5 minutes, 65 minutes around.
Okay. And after it came out, so you said it was widely viewed?
We had an open premiere because nobody ever thought about doing this kind of thing in Bangladesh. Since the rap emerged around 2005. Mm-hmm. So we had it open for all kinds of people. In Russian Cultural Center, and we had a house full of audience. Mm-hmm. Even some of them were standing and sitting on the stairs. And we had several shows like this in the city.
Okay. And what was the impact of that exposure?
The impact is about the awareness of the people who watched this. They were more courageous. Mm-hmm. And since then, many of them were talking about these kinds of practices against this kind of force.
Was there any threats made against you and others involved?
Yeah. Throughout the time I investigated it and when I began shooting it, this documentary, even one of the topmost government officers, whom we selected to be interviewed for this documentary, he said that you would be banished into the air just at a signal from this force. So why don't you stop and go back? So these kind of things.
And were you really seriously feared for your life then, while you were putting this documentary together?
Yes. One of my friends was its director. I was just researcher and investigator, and there were cameramen that they were also my friends. Some of them decided not to publish their names mm-hmm. at first. So when we completed it, we were convinced that it was a great job. So they decided to publish their name. But still, we all were afraid of our life and our family members as well.
So this crackdown on the bloggers, do you see what kind of response has social media had to this? Are they
very
outraged?
Bad. You know, after the arrest of the 4 bloggers, well, still social media has this thing that you will always find all kinds of people there. So you will find Islamist radicalists there,
yes,
too,
yes,
who supports the arrest of the blogger.
Right.
Not only support, they think that these bloggers should have been beheaded. You know, should have been beheaded for their mm-hmm. preaching against the religion.
Okay.
So, but those who try to think, those who try to make a difference, or they try to protest it. And many of them made their profile picture with their fist hitting in the air. You know?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Some of them made a profile picture on the Facebook profile.
Right.
There was a profile picture that you are fitting your fist into the air.
Okay. Okay. You know,
with a red background as a protest against this arrest.
Okay. And have there been any physical protests against this?
Yes, or? There have been a lot of physical protests in Shahbagh, around Shahbagh, in different kind of universities and around across the country. the human they formed human chain, uh-huh. and they brought out processions, they brought out torch processions across the country to demand the release of the bloggers.
Okay, and what do you think is going to happen?
It's pretty much a political question. I think they are caught in the political battle in Bangladesh, the bloggers, because the Shahbag movement is all about getting the war criminals mm-hmm. who supported Pakistan in 1971 against the freedom of independence war of Bangladesh. So the Shahbag movement was to hang all of them. The government has just begun a trial of war criminals mm-hmm. just a couple of years ago. So what the Shahbag movement demand is that all these war criminals must be hanged because they are identified, mm-hmm. there are a lot of evidence against them. So when this Shahbag movement started, those Islamist people became very angry because those who were accused on these charges are the leaders of the biggest Islamist party in Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. So they tried to save their leaders. So all these theories about atheisms, bloggers, is nothing. It's political propaganda created by Islamist radicalists there who want to save their leaders from this war crime trial, who want to end this trial. And the Shahbag movement is against that. They just right. demand justice be prevailed.
So finally, overall, when you go back to Bangladesh, are you hopeful that maybe the people, these bloggers will be freed and the social media crackdown won't continue? Or are you afraid that conditions could get worse?
We are expecting our general national election next year. So I already told you that this is completely a political thing.
Yes.
This is completely a political thing. These bloggers have been writing about their religious beliefs, the difference between religion and science, for the last 5 years. Mm-hmm. But suddenly they are branded as atheist bloggers. Uh-huh. Just for the war crime, for this war crimes trial. So this has made a platform for people, mm-hmm. young people,
right.
who are getting together just to say no to this kind of old tradition of politics, okay. you know, mixing religion with politics. And I hope a good future, because young people are there to raise a voice against this war crime.
That was my interview with Imran Hussain, recorded in early July. Before we continue our discussion, I want to remind everyone that you can view or listen to this program anytime by downloading our podcasts at globaljournalist.org. You can also find interesting articles, photos, and interviews related to our program on our website. Please send us questions or comments via globaljournalist@kbia.org or our Facebook page. And you can follow us on Twitter @globaljourn. Khalid Katak works for the News International in Pakistan, and Vikas Banuri writes for the Independent Press Network in Islamabad. He's also a columnist for the Frontier Post. That's the first English daily in Peshawar, one of the country's poorest areas and a hotbed for terrorist activity. The two join me in the studio to talk about the dangers of being a reporter in Pakistan and the profound impact of the war on terror inside their country. Khalid Katak started by discussing a recent visit to the 9/11 memorial in New York City.
I was really sad to visit that place, and my sadness was because of the loss Pakistan faced afterwards, as well as the loss U.S. faced at that time. But I would say, and we generally do say in Pakistan, that we have had many 9/11s after that mm-hmm. single incident. And we lost more people and we lost more property than the United States. And we are now in an endless war against terrorism, mm-hmm. and God knows where and when this will end.
Right.
So the level of destruction and the level of, reaction mm-hmm. is far stronger and far yeah. powerful in Pakistan.
So
that's been quite unfortunate.
Yeah, people talk about how life has changed in the United States since 9/11, but what you're saying is that life has changed even more drastically. I think you said 49,000 people
Before 9/11, there was no such security threat as we are facing today in Pakistan. Like, I can't, we have no guarantee if we go out from our homes, even in big cities. Like, I'm not talking about tribal areas or the areas where the fight against terrorists or extremists going on. Nowhere in no part of the country is safe. It's very unfortunate. Right. And that's something that we are all worried about.
And Vikas, would you like to add to that about how...
Actually, frankly, our losses are much more than the U.S. loss. In total, we have lost more than 40,000 people. And an economy which has a budget of annual budget of $33 billion, it has lost over $100 billion, which has been recently said in an economic survey, that we have lost over $100 billion in this war. Mm-hmm. Our infrastructure is damaged. We had one tunnel in all Pakistan. Even that was damaged. So our people, our psychology has changed. I mean, when you have threat that you move out and you do not know whether you would come back home or not safe, it's quite appalling, you know. It's quite understandable that your thoughts are changed. You cannot live the way you were living. It's not peace at all.
How dangerous is it to be a journalist in Pakistan?
Frankly speaking, like when we compare it with the United States or any developed advanced country, it's 1,000% more dangerous than any other developed country. So the danger the journalists face in Pakistan, like it is not just those who are working like in the areas where there is this war on terror is going on, this operation against extremists is being carried out. The threat is everywhere. The threat is from people from like different organizations and of course from extremists as well. So generally speaking, like if I'm a reporter in Lahore in a big city, so the threat is that whenever there is unfortunately some kind of bomb blast or such incident, so we are on risk, and this happens quite frequently.
So you're at risk from both terrorism activities and from people who don't like what you're writing about.
Yes. And they could be anybody. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not necessarily that just intelligence agencies would threaten you and would react against you.
Right.
Any individual can be against you.
And in, why does this go on so extensively, would you say, Bukas? Because it's because of the impunity, because it's not being cracked down on enough? The people who killed journalists aren't prosecuted?
Somehow, you can say. Frankly, like yesterday only, one of the major politicians in Pakistan, he commented in United Kingdom that there are more than 30 Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan groups in Pakistan alone. Mm-hmm. We know one Tehreek-e-Taliban Pakistan, but there are 30 different smaller groups, and there are many other groups. So what happens, we have threat from them. Mm-hmm. We have threat from the state institutions as well. For example, that also goes once you are actually infringing, when you are leaving the boundaries, you know. If you are working in the boundaries that the state has allowed, it's okay. If you are going out of it...
In other words, like, if you report about corruption.
Yes, corruption is... Now it's easier to report on corruption. Civil government is not that dangerous now. But if you're reporting about sensitive subjects such as radicalization or militancy or activities of security agencies, then you are in danger.
Are women's rights getting better in Pakistan in recent years? Or is it because of the rise of extremism in some cases getting worse?
In some parts, actually, it is. I mean, the urban centers in the country, Islamabad, Lahore, and Karachi, we have good freedoms for women. Still, there are cases, but they are minimal. Overall, in the rural societies, the society hasn't changed. The education is very low. Poverty is very much around there. So that's the reason that women rights aren't that visible over there. But overall, in the country, I see there is a change with this free media, this, you know, like the breaking news items, even reporting of such small incident. Like once, there was a time in Pakistan, if someone had thrown acid on a woman, that would just get a small media report. Now we have a breaking news item in the main television channels. So, of course, that changes with time. And that has had an impact in Pakistan.
Okay.
Yeah.
And finally, let's talk about the progress for both democracy and free press. You know, with a new prime minister, I imagine there's some more hopes. What are Vikas, what are your hopes and predictions for the future of democracy and free media in Pakistan?
I think Pakistan is much changed now. We know that it is the first ever time in the history that a democratic government has had a transition period and they gave power to another democratic government. And overall, the people are more participating in the electoral process. Overall, the media is very much pro-democracy. They are all standing up for one cause, that we have to stand for democracy. The military is also very much, security institutions, all institutions, state institutions, have now accepted that democracy is the way forward for Pakistan. And of course, they understand that free media also plays some role, rather a major role. Somehow, there are sections in the society, in the state institutions, which we think that they might actually have conflicting views, they might be opposed to democracy. But overall, the society, the media, the state institutions, they are all towards democracy.
That was my interview with Khalid Katak and Vikas Banuri, recorded in early July. Global Journalist is produced by the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. The show is directed by Travis McMillan, audio by Pat Akers. Raymond Tungakar is our executive producer. Free Press Watch is up next, and please join us again next week for another Global Journalist. I'm David Reed.
And now, Free Press Watch, a weekly segment on Global Journalist where we bring you a rundown of recent events involving press freedom around the world. I'm Raymond Tungakar. Today's news comes from the Committee to Protect Journalists and the Manila Times. In the United Arab Emirates, an Egyptian journalist has been held without charge by authorities for nearly a month. The Committee to Protect Journalists reports that the wife of journalist Anas Fouda hasn't heard from him since July 3rd. Fouda, who spent the past 10 years in the UAE, works as an editorial director for the Middle East Broadcasting Center Group. In addition, he also blogs about Egyptian politics. In an earlier interview with the Committee to Protect Journalists, Fouda said he'd been banned from traveling, possibly because of articles he had written that were sympathetic to the Egyptian Muslim Brotherhood. UAE authorities have arrested Muslim Brotherhood members in recent weeks over concerns that they're attempting to overthrow the ruling regime. In the Philippines, two journalists were shot to death in front of a convenience store in the capital city of Manila. The Manila Times reports that the victims, Richard Ko and Bonifacio Loreto, worked as columnists for a Filipino newspaper. The National Press Club of the Philippines denounced the murder of the two and criticized the government of current President Benigno Aquino, saying that media killers are becoming bolder because of the government's inability to protect journalists. According to the Committee to Protect Journalists, since 1992, 73 reporters have been killed in the Philippines in connection with their work, making it the second deadliest country to practice journalism. For more information on these and other stories involving press freedom around the world, please visit our website at globaljournalist.org. Thank you for joining us this week on Global Journalist. I'm Raymond Tungakar.